Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 80 countries around the world over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on radiation poisoning of America when we come back. Hey, if you're earning $50,000 a year and you pay all of your 14 taxes, you get to keep 41% of what you create and produce. Government gets 59%. Now, that's $20,000 for you and $30,000 for the government. You know, isn't that just real special? And if you think your share isn't enough, then why don't you work twice as hard and produce twice as much and then make $100,000 next year? Then go ahead and pay your same 14 taxes, just like you did this year. And you're going to net 24% and the government net 76%. Now, that means that for working twice as hard and producing twice as much, you're going to net $4,000 more, all right? That's 8% more net take-home pay than you did this year. You produce 100% more, and you get to keep 8% of it. Now, that's guaranteed by Congress and the IRS. Now, there ought to be something more intelligent for you and I to do than to work to put ourselves into the top 5% of income earners and then only net 25% of it. Why don't you call today and order my free 4-hour CD disc package and let me tell you how to deal with that kind of crime. It's 4 hours of entertaining information, and it'll answer many of your legal questions about taxes and why it is that we pay so much and receive so little in return. And let me teach you how to do just that in my Tax and Status School, which is now available on compact disc for adult home education. Now, to order your free general law CD package, just call us direct. The number to call, 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Or you can go to our website, georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Then click onto the email machine and send us an email request for that free general law CD package. Once more, that's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Or call us direct at 417-273-4967. The radiation poisoning of America. That's the cell phone that you have stuck to your ear. I see people walking around with cell phones in their ears constantly. They're driving down the road. They're walking down the street talking to themselves. The cell phone has now become so small that you can't tell people who are crazy just talking to themselves and people that are holding a conversation, talking to somebody in China or South Korea or Japan. But the cell phone and the wireless dangers have certain fundamentals. You've probably heard that there's radiation emitting from your cell phone. It's something that you can't see, hear, feel, taste, touch, or smell, but it's there, whether you know it or not. And it's deadly. And it kills people. And they're proposing to put up some cell towers that are going to be super gigahertz towers that don't just cover 6 to 12 or 20 or 30 miles. It's going to cover 3,000 square miles. I mean, it's going to cover whole states like Delaware or Rhode Island, Maryland. Just one tower, cover the whole state. And it's going to have so much electromagnetic energy that it is going to kill birds and bees, and I'll show you what the dangers are, and there's nobody to regulate it. There isn't anybody out there like the Food and Drug Administration, which is typically there, at least nominally, to protect you from the dangers of an overzealous industry. And so, if there's going to be any protection from it, I guess we're going to have to do it ourselves. So let's see what the fundamentals are. It's getting very difficult to imagine a world without mobile communications. You know, wireless internet access is set to blanket the planet, just like cell phone networks already do. There has been an explosive development practically all during the last three decades that brought mobile to the farthest corners of the earth. But the technology is not without danger. The microwaves that carry bits and packets of data also carry a germ of destruction. Some people, as many as 120,000 Californians, and by implication 1 million Americans, are actually unable to work as they suffer from the incapacitating influence of this cacophony in the ether that has on them. Now, we might say that they're the unlucky ones who have to suffer for progress to continue, but have you ever heard of canaries in the mines? Now, they were the first ones to die when a potentially deadly but otherwise undetectable accumulation of gas in the mine threatened the lives of the miners working underground. So they'd take a canary in a cage down with them. If the canary died, then that said that, well, it's time for us to get out of here. So what if those 120,000 Californians and that 1 million Americans nationwide, by extension, tens of millions of people worldwide, are in very real danger, or in a very real sense, they are the equivalent of deep mine canaries? Are we not then ignoring their plight at our own very imminent peril? Arthur Furstenberg, himself a sufferer of what the Russians call microwave sickness, has put together the salient facts about the largest biological experiment ever undertaken in a very readable article published in the El Dorado Sun. We cannot call ourselves informed in the wireless debate unless we start looking at its dark side as well as all of the positive aspects. Furstenberg's article is as good as any to get us going in this direction. In 2002, Gro Harlem Brundtland, then head of the World Health Organization, told a Norwegian journalist that cell phones were banned from her office in Geneva because she personally becomes ill if a cell phone is brought within about 4 meters, that's 13 feet of her. Mrs. Brundtland is a medical doctor and former prime minister of Norway. This sensational news, published on March 9, 2002, was ignored by every other newspaper in the world. In the following week, Michael Repacholi, R-E-P-A-C-H-O-L-I, Repacholi, I guess it is, her subordinate in charge of the International EMF, that's the Electromagnetic Field Project, responded with a public statement belittling her boss's concerns. 5 months later, for reasons that may or many suspect were related to those circumstances, Mrs. Brundtland announced she would step down from her leadership post at the World Health Organization after just one term. Now, nothing could better illustrate our collective schizophrenia when it comes to thinking about electromagnetic radiation. We respond to those who are worried about its dangers, hence the International EMF project, but we ignore the marginalized, we marginalize those like Mrs. Brundtland, who have already succumbed to its effects. Now, as a consultant on the health effects of wireless technology, I receive calls that can be broadly divided into two main groups. Those from people who are merely worried, whom I will call A, and those from people who are already sick, those I will call B. And I sometimes wish I could arrange a large conference call and have these two groups talk to each other. There needs to be more mutual understanding so that we're all trying to solve the same problem together. Caller A, worried, commonly asks, what kind of shield should I buy for this cell phone, or what kind of headset to wear with it? Sometimes he wants to know, what is a safe distance to live from a cell phone tower? Caller B, who's already sick, wants to know what kind of shielding to put on her house, what kind of medical treatment to get, or, increasingly often, what part of the country could she move to in order to escape the radiation to save her life? Well, the following is designed as a sort of a primer. First, to help everybody get more or less on the same page, and then second, to clear up some of the confusions so that we can make rational decisions toward a healthier world. So there are certain fundamentals that we ought to be aware of. The most basic fact about cell phones and cell phone towers is that they emit microwave radiation. So do Wi-Fi, that's wireless internet antennas, wireless computers, cordless, that is portable phones, and their base units and all other wireless devices. If it's a communication device and it's not attached to the wall by a wire, then it is emitting radiation. Now, most of the Wi-Fi systems and some cordless telephones operate at the exact same frequency as a microwave oven, while other devices use a different frequency. Now, Wi-Fi is always on and always radiating. The base units of most cordless telephones are always radiating. Even when no one is using the telephone, it's still radiating. A cell phone that is on but not in use is also radiating. And needless to say, cell towers are always radiating. So why is this a problem? Well, scientists usually divide the electromagnetic spectrum into ionizing and non-ionizing. Ionizing radiation, which includes X-rays and atomic radiation, causes cancer. Non-ionizing radiation, which includes microwave radiation, is believed to be safe. Believed. Not known, just believed. This distinction always reminded me of the propaganda in George Orwell's Animal Farm. Four legs good, two legs bad. Non-ionizing good, ionizing bad is as little to be trusted. An astronomer once quipped that if Neil Armstrong had taken a cell phone to the moon in 1969, it would have appeared to be the third most powerful source of microwave radiation in the universe, next only to the sun and the Milky Way. And he was right. Life evolved with negligible levels of microwave radiation. An increasing number of scientists speculate that our body's own cells, in fact, use the microwave spectrum to communicate with one another, like children whispering in the dark, and that cell phones, like jackhammers, interfere with their signaling. Well, in any case, it's a fact that we are all being bombarded day in and day out, whether we use a cell phone or not. We're being bombarded by an amount of microwave radiation that is some 10 million times stronger than the average natural background. Now, that number, again, is 10 million times stronger than the natural background radiation. And it's also a fact that most of this radiation is due to technology that has been developed since 1970. Now, as far as cell phones themselves are concerned, if you put one up to your head, you are damaging your brain in a number of different ways. First of all, think of a microwave oven. A cell phone, like a microwave oven, and unlike a hot shower, heats you from the inside out, not from the outside in. And there are no sensory nerve endings in the brain to warn you of a rise in temperature because we did not evolve with microwave radiation. And this never happens in nature. Worse, the structure of your head and brain is so complex and it is so non-uniform that hot spots are produced where heating can be tens or hundreds of times what is nearby. So hot spots can occur both close to the surface of the skull and deep within the brain and also on a molecular level. Cell phones are regulated by the Federal Communications Commission, and you can find in the packaging of most new telephones a number called the specific absorption rate. It's also known as the SAR, which is supposed to indicate the rate at which energy is absorbed by the brain from that particular model. Now, one problem, however, is the arbitrary assumption upon which the FCC's regulations are based, that the brain can safely dissipate added heat at a rate of up to 1 degree Celsius per hour. Well, compounding this is the scandalous procedure used to demonstrate compliance with these limits and then give each cell phone its SAR rating. The standard way to measure the SAR is on a phantom consisting incredibly of a homogeneous fluid encased in plexiglass in the shape of a head. So presto, there are no hotspots. But in reality, people, you know, actual people who use these cell phones for hours a day are chronically heating places in their brain. The FCC's safety standard, by the way, was developed by electrical engineers. It was not developed by doctors. Now this takes us to the blood-brain barrier. The second effect that I want to focus on, which has been proven in the laboratory, should all by itself have been enough to shut down this industry and should be enough to scare away anyone from ever using a cell phone again. And I call it the smoking gun of cell phone experiments. Now, like most biological effects of microwave radiation, this one has nothing to do with heating. The brain is protected by tight junctions between adjacent cells of capillary walls. It's the so-called blood-brain barrier, which, like a border patrol, lets nutrients pass through from the blood to the brain, but keeps toxic substances out. Well, since 1988, researchers in the laboratory of a Swedish neurosurgeon by the name of Leif Salford has been running variations on the simple experiment. So they expose young laboratory rats to either a cell phone or other source of microwave radiation. Then, later, they sacrifice the animals and they look for albumin in their brain tissue. Albumin is a protein that is a normal component of blood, but that does not normally cross the blood-brain barrier. The presence of albumin in brain tissue is always a sign that blood vessels have been damaged and that the brain has lost some of its protection. So here's what these researchers have found. Consistently, for 18 years now, microwave radiation at doses equal to a cell phone emission causes albumin to be found in brain tissue. A one-time exposure to an ordinary cell phone for just 2 minutes causes albumin to leak into the brain. In one set of experiments, reducing the exposure level by a factor of 1,000 actually increased the damage to the blood-brain barrier, showing that this is not a dose-response effect, and that reducing the power will not make wireless technology any safer. And finally, in research published in June of 2003, a single 2-hour exposure to a cell phone, just once, during its lifetime, permanently damaged the blood-brain barrier, and an autopsy 50 days later was found to have damaged or destroyed up to 2% of an animal's brain cells, including cells in areas of the brain concerned with learning, memory, and movement. Now, reducing the exposure level by a factor of 10, or reducing it by a factor of 100, thereby duplicating the effect of wearing a headset, moving a cell phone further from our body, or standing next to somebody else's phone, did not appreciably change the results. Even at the lowest exposure, half the animals had a moderate to high number of damaged neurons. Now, what are the implications for us? Well, 2 minutes on a cell phone disrupts the blood-brain barrier. 2 hours on a cell phone causes permanent brain damage, and secondhand radiation may be almost as bad. The blood-brain barrier is the same in a rat as it is in a human being. Now, these results caused enough of a commotion in Europe that in November of 2003, a conference was held, sponsored by the European Union, titled The Blood-Brain Barrier. Can it be influenced by RF, that's radio frequency field interactions, as if to reassure the public? Well, we are doing something about this. You know, the industry says, see, we're doing something about it. Don't worry. But predictably, nothing was done about it, as nothing has been done about it over the past 30 years. America's Alan Frey during the 1970s was the first of many to demonstrate that low-level microwave radiation damages the blood-brain barrier. Similar mechanisms protect the eye, the blood vitreous barrier, and the fetus, that's the placenta barrier. And the work of Frey and others indicates that microwave radiation damages those barriers also. The implications are that no pregnant woman should ever use a cell phone. Now, Dr. Salford is very outspoken about his work, and he has called the use of handheld cell phones the largest human biological experiment ever undertaken. And he has publicly warned that a whole generation of cell phone using teenagers may suffer from mental defects or Alzheimer's disease by the time they reach middle age. Now, there is a thing called radio wave sickness also. And unfortunately, cell phone users are not the only ones being injured, nor should we be worried only about the brain. The following summary is distilled from a vast scientific literature on the effects of radio waves, a larger spectrum which includes microwaves, together with the experiences of scientists and doctors all over the world with whom I am in contact. Organs that have shown to be especially susceptible to radio waves include the lungs, the nervous system, the heart, the eyes, testes, and the thyroid gland. Diseases that have increased remarkably over the past couple of decades, and that there is good reason to connect with the massive increase in radiation in our environment, include asthma, sleep disorders, anxiety disorders, attention deficit disorder, autism, multiple sclerosis, ALS, Alzheimer's disease, epilepsy, fibromyalgia, chronic fatigue syndrome, cataracts, hypothyroidism, diabetes, malignant melanoma, testicular cancer, and heart attacks and strokes in young people. Now, radiation from microwave towers has also been associated with forest die-off, reproductive failure, and population decline in many species of birds, and ill health and birth deformities in farm animals. The literature showing biological effects of microwave radiation is truly enormous, running to tens of thousands of documents, and I'm amazed that industry spokespersons are getting away with saying that wireless technology has been proved safe, or, just as ridiculous, that there is no evidence of any harm. Now, I have omitted one disease from the above list, the illness that caller B has, and that I have. And a short history is in order here. Back during the 1950s and 60s, workers who built, tested, and repaired radar equipment came down with this disease in large numbers. So did operators of industrial microwave heaters and sealers. Now, the Soviets named it appropriately. They called it radio wave sickness, and they studied it extensively. In the West, its existence was denied totally, but workers came down with it anyway. Now, witness the congressional hearings held in 1981, which was chaired by then Representative Al Gore, on the health effects of radio frequency heaters and sealers. Another episode in See, We're Doing Something About This. While nothing is actually being done, there's a lot of hoopla in Congress, or by boards, commissions, and groups, to give us the appearance of we're doing something about this when in reality nothing is being done. Well, today, with the mass proliferation of radio towers and personnel transmitters, the disease has spread like a plague into the general population, and estimates of its prevalence range up to one-third of our population. That's about 100 million people. but it's rarely recognized for what it is until it has so disabled a person that he or she can no longer participate in society. Now, you may recognize some of its common symptoms. It's called insomnia, dizziness, nausea, headaches, fatigue, memory loss, inability to concentrate, depression, chest discomfort, ringing in the ears. Patients may also develop medical problems such as chronic respiratory infections, heart arrhythmias, sudden fluctuations in blood pressure, uncontrolled blood sugar, dehydration. Some even experience seizures and internal bleeding. So what makes this disease so difficult to accept and even more difficult to cope with? Well, that is that no treatment is likely to succeed unless we can also avoid exposure to its cause, and its cause is now everywhere. A 1998 survey by the California Department of Health Services indicated that at that time, 120,000 Californians, and by implication that would make more than 1 million Americans, unable to work due to electromagnetic pollution. The ranks of these so-called electrically sensitive are swelling in almost every country in the world. Marginalized, stigmatized, and ignored. With the level of radiation everywhere today, they almost never recover, and sometimes they take their own lives by suicide. They're acting as a warning for all of us, says Ollie Johansson, of people with this illness. It could be a major mistake to subject the entire world's population to whole body irradiation 24 hours a day. A neuroscientist at the famous institute in Stockholm, Dr. Johansson, heads a research team that is documenting a significant and permanent worsening of the public health that began precisely when the second generation, that is the 1800 megahertz cell phones, were introduced into Sweden in late 1997. After a decade-long decline, the number of Swedish workers on sick leave began to rise in late 1997, and they more than doubled during the next 5 years. During the same period of time, sales of antidepressant drugs also doubled, and the number of traffic accidents after declining for years began to climb again in 1997. The number of deaths from Alzheimer's disease after declining for several years rose sharply in 1999 and had doubled by 2001. This two-year delay is understandable when one considers that Alzheimer's disease requires some time to develop. Now, if cell phones and cell towers are really deadly, have the radio and TV towers that we have been living with for a century been safe? Well, in 2002, Örjan Hallberg and Ollie Johansson co-authored a paper titled Cancer Trends During the 20th Century, which examined one aspect of that question. Well, they found in the United States, Sweden, and dozens of other countries that mortality rates for skin melanoma and for bladder, prostate, colon, breast, and lung cancers closely paralleled the degree of public exposure to radio waves during the past 100 years. When radio broadcasting increased in a given location, so did those forms of cancer. When it decreased, so did the forms of cancer. And a sensational finding, country by country, and county by county in Sweden, they found statistically that exposure to radio waves appears to be as big a factor in causing lung cancer as does cigarette smoking. Now that brings me to address a widespread misconception. The biggest difference between the cell towers of today and the radio towers of the past is not their safety, but rather in their numbers. You see, the number of ordinary radio stations in the United States today is still less than 14,000. But cell towers and Wi-Fi towers number in the hundreds of thousands, and cell phones, wireless computers, cordless telephones, and two-way radios number in the hundreds of millions. Radar facilities and emergency communication networks are also proliferating out of control. And since 1978, when the Environmental Protection Agency last surveyed the radio frequency environment in the United States, the average urban dweller's exposure to radio waves has increased 1,000 times. Most of this increase occurring in just the last 9 years. In the same period of time, radio pollution has spread from the cities to the rest like a ubiquitous fog over the entire planet. Well, let me put my famous arrow in the margin. That's quite a story. It's almost enough to make you want to swear off the telephone, isn't it? Hang on a second, I got to give you a reminder here that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard worldwide over the Internet daily. For more information about the law school and The Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. The law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. For more information, please go to our homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals but by prearrangement. The Law Hour website is updated every week. It has our radio log schedule and archives that can be accessed through the website as well. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. The Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events 7 days a week. The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the Law School at 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief. And the Law Hour and editorial review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse and recommend books, periodicals, papers, and newsletters to our listeners. These endorsements or recommendations that we give do not mean that those authors or publications that we endorse and recommend are necessarily going to reciprocate. Most of these authors and publications cited here on the Law Hour are political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and editorial review. These opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They do not necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, sponsors, the management, or the staff of this network or a local radio station. For more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. Today's report comes from http://educate-yourself.org. It's entitled Wireless and Cell Phone Dangers. Wireless and cell phone dangers. All right, the vast human consequences of all of this is being ignored. And since the late 1990s, a whole new class of environmental refugees has been created right here in the United States. We now have more and more people sick, dying, seeking relief from our suffering and leaving our homes and our livelihoods, living in cars, trailers, and tents in remote places. unlike victims of hurricanes and earthquakes, were not the subject of any relief efforts. No one is donating money to help us or to buy us a protected refuge. No one is volunteering to forego their cell phones, their wireless computers, and their cordless phones so that we can once more be their neighbors and live among them. The worried and the sick have not yet opened their hearts to each other, but they're asking questions. To answer caller A, no shield or headset will protect you from your cell or portable phone. There is no safe distance from a cell tower. If your cell phone or your wireless computer works where you live, you are being irradiated 24 hours a day. To caller B, to effectively shield a house is difficult and rarely successful. There are only a few doctors in the United States attempting to treat radio wave sickness, and their success rate is poor, because there are few places left on Earth where you can go to escape this radiation and recover. Yes, radiation comes down from satellites too. They're part of the problem, not the solution. There is simply no way to make wireless technology safe. There is simply no way to make wireless technology safe. How can you say it any differently? Our society has become both socially and economically dependent in just one decade upon a technology that is doing tremendous damage to the fabric of our world. The more entrenched we let ourselves become in this world, the more difficult it will become to change our course in the future. The time to extricate ourselves, both individually and collectively, difficult though it is already, is now. Now, what do you think the chances of that are going to be? Now, that's page 6 of 17. Now, here's an FDA memo. It's called Data Strongly Suggests That Microwaves Can Promote Cancer. In the spring of 1993, at the height of public concern over cell phone brain tumor risks, Food and Drug Administration biologists concluded that the available data strongly suggests that microwaves can accelerate the development of cancer. This assessment is an internal agency memo recently obtained by Microwave News under the Freedom of Information Act. Of approximately 8 chronic animal experiments known to us, 5 resulted in increased numbers of malignancies, accelerated progression of tumors, or both. So wrote Dr. May Swicord and Larry Kress of the FDA's Center for Devices and Radiological Health in Rockville, Maryland. They also pointed to other evidence from laboratory in vitro studies that supported a cancer risk. And yet, in its public statements at that time, the agency played down these findings. For instance, in a talk paper issued in early February, the FDA stated that there was limited evidence that suggests that lower levels of microwaves might cause adverse health effects. A few studies suggest that microwave levels from cellular phones can accelerate the development of cancer in laboratory animals. But there is much uncertainty among scientists about whether these results apply to the use of cellular telephones. But in a letter submitted to the U.S. House of Representatives 4 years later, during May of 1997, the FDA stated little is known about the possible health effects of repeated or long-term exposure to low levels of radiofrequency radiation of the types emitted by wireless communications devices. And again, in February of 2000, the FDA issued a nomination reiterating their position, stating that there is currently insufficient scientific basis for concluding either that wireless communication technologies are safe or that they pose a risk to millions of users. A significant research effort involving large, well-planned animal experiments is needed to provide the basis to assess the risk to human health of wireless communication devices. Dr. Swicord joined Motorola after leaving the FDA and is also the chief editor on the editorial staff of BEMS, that's Bioelectromagnetic Society. Now, although most of us are unaware of it, we are literally swimming in a sea of radiation. And some of it is natural, like the cosmic rays that bombard our planet from outer space, trace amounts from elements that naturally occur in the ground, and even microwave radiation from sunspots and solar flares. But increasingly, the radiation that we're being subjected to today comes from man-made sources, ranging from medical x-rays to leakage from appliances to cell phones. And while much has been written about man-made radiation, most of us have little understanding of what it is and how it might affect us. Mobile operators and governments have claimed cell phones do not emit enough microwaves to harm people. But sensitive Koreans are feeling their negative effects, according to a survey by Representative Soo Ha Suk at the governing Yuri Party. 10.9% of 1,000 respondents said that they felt physical disorders due to cell phone usage. And there are some links from the latest weekly newsletter in Germany, Citizens Initiative, compiled by Klaus Rudolph. And this newsletter deals exclusively with issues of microwave and other EMF wave damage and is a good source for continued updates. Dr. George Carlo, who used to run a multi-million dollar research program for the cell phone industry and went public regarding the dangers posed by cell phones, used the analogy of putting a frog in water. If you put a frog in boiling water, it'll jump out. However, if you put a frog in cold water and then gradually heat the water, you can cook the frog because the frog's body will adjust to the slight changes in temperature and the frog will not notice that it's being cooked. The same thing is happening to unsuspecting people, a public that has not been informed about the real dangers of microwave radiation from cell phones, Wi-Fi, and other high-frequency radiation-emitting devices and antennas. So the truth of the matter, your cell phone and your Wi-Fi might well indeed be making you and those around you sick. The increasing popularity of Wi-Fi comes on the heels of the explosive growth in wireless mobile telephones and amid heightened concerns over the health hazards of saturating levels of electromagnetic radiation. Microwaves at current exposure levels are linked to brain damage, DNA damage, brain tumors, cancers, microwave sickness, impairment of cognitive functions, impairment of reproduction and fertility, affecting humans, rodents, birds, and bees. Notice bees. I've got a report here on this collapse of bee populations. Let me flip over here to another part of the story. Let's see if I can find it here. Israeli research: cell phone radiation may cause visual damage. Notice here, I picked out 13 articles. I won't get to all of them, and I won't read all of any of them, but I wanted to point out that these reports are coming from all over the world. They come from Norway, Sweden, England, Germany, the United States, South Korea. Let's see, where else have we got one here? I guess that's about it. There are research projects going on in each one of these countries. These are all first world countries. We're not talking about Rwanda or Uganda in the heart of Black Africa. We're talking about the modern, up-to-date, first world countries with first world economies. And here's a number that ought to boggle your mind. By 1999, there were 1 billion people on planet Earth with cell phones. By 2003, it had grown to, or doubled, to 2 billion, and today it's up to 3 billion. You got that? I mean, this thing started about 1990. And by about 2008, as I speak here in round numbers, in about 18 years, we have 1/2 of the world's population wired in with this cordless technology. Now, what do you think the chances are going to be that we're going to stop it, tear down all the towers, and stop talking over cell phones? I mean, that's going to happen, you know, like you're going to, you know, flap your arms and fly. You can forget it. Now, I want you to remember that the Messiah said in Matthew 24, he said that except those days should be shortened, there would no flesh be saved alive on planet Earth. Now, you know, in the past, we've talked about these things like nuclear bomb war, where, you know, Russia and China attack the United States, and the United States then in turn attacks Russia and China, and we have this nuclear black night, and, you know, and we kill off millions, maybe billions of people or something like that, and there's a few survivors. It appears that this entire concept that we see here in Revelation chapter 6 isn't as far-fetched as maybe we once thought. I mean, just going back to 1990, it's 18 years now, but going back to 1990 doesn't seem all that long ago to me. You know, when you get to be an old man, you look back 20 years isn't that far. You know, when you're 19 years old, 20 years is a long time ago. It's in ancient times. That's back in prehistory, but that's true. For you, it's prehistory, but not for those of us that have been around. So we have watched this cell phone problem develop. I didn't know there was a problem until I got this report. I saw this report. Now, I've got these cell phones in my house, and we are in the process of changing. I'll show you how to do that, and we're going to get rid of the cell phones. And we were asked the other night, I was on the air, and was asked, well, how far from a cell phone tower is safe? And the answer is none. Now, of course, the further away you are, the better, you know. But notice that this article here is telling you that the quantity or the amount that you decrease this microwave radiation doesn't do much for the blood-brain barrier. There's other problems that develop, and I would imagine that the fewer, the lesser of, the further away you can get from the microwave tower, and I just happen to live about a mile from one. I don't know how far is safe, but I'd say a mile is better than living across the street from it. And they put these towers up, you know, just about everywhere. There's 2 or 3 of them over in Gainesville. There's at least 2 that are on the hill overlooking Gainesville. They're within a quarter of a mile. When you get into big cities, they put these towers right up on top of tall buildings. So the people that are in the buildings, the people down at street level, the people all around them, you know, are being nuked. And they're being nuked 24/7. Which is why I've suggested that you get the hell out of the city while you still can. Get out in the countryside someplace. Well, in a recent scientific study conducted by a team of researchers, a possible link between microwave radiation similar to the type found in cellular phones and different kinds of damage to the visual system was found. At least one kind of damage seems to accumulate over time and not heal, challenging the common view and leading the researchers to the assertion that the duration of exposure is not less important than the intensity of the radiation. The researchers also emphasized that existing exposure guidelines for microwave radiation might have to change. This is from Israeli research, cell phone radiation may cause visual damage. Let's see where this article begins here. The effects of exposure to electromagnetic radiation have long been a subject for debate among scientists. The technological developments of the last 20 years, such as cell and cordless phones, wireless communications, monitors, and even high-voltage lines, have all been studied as potential risk factors for cancer and other diseases. Less known to the public, but still a matter of some extensive research, is the study of the effect of microwave radiation on the visual system and especially on the lens of the eye. The basic motivation for this research came after World War II, when it was suspected that radar operators suffered a greater risk of developing cataracts, a condition characterized by clouding in the natural lens of the eye, although these particular suspicions were eventually shown to be debatable. They were the trigger for the first guidelines for exposure to electromagnetic radiation. Moreover, the eye, as our natural radiation detector, is the obvious choice for investigating the effects of electromagnetic radiation upon the human body. In more recent studies on animals, the effects of microwave radiation as a risk factor for cataracts have been established and have helped to determine the guidelines put forth by the International Commission on Non-Ionizing Radiation Protection in 1998. Now, a common measure for microwave radiation is the specific absorption rate, called the SAR, which is the average power density absorbed in a given volume per average weight density. It's the watt per kilogram. This is the standard used by cell phone companies, among others, to measure levels of radiation. When microwave energy impinges upon body tissue, part of it is absorbed and converted to heat due to ionic conduction. This heat manifests itself as a temperature increase inside the tissue. Past studies in animals have shown that even a slight increase in temperature close to the lens, as low as 3 degrees Celsius, can increase the risk of developing a cataract. With a low enough SAR, the local temperature in the lens might never increase to that level. A less common measure is called specific energy absorption, and is defined as the energy density absorbed in the tissue divided by its weight density. While the SAR is the measure of the rate microwave radiation is absorbed by the tissue, the SA is the measure of the total energy absorbed. This difference played a significant role in a recently published study on the effects of microwave radiation on the visual system. In the study conducted by researchers in the Rappaport Faculty of Medicine at the Technion and published in the journal Bioelectromagnetics, a new link has been found between microwave radiation and the development of cataracts. Eye lenses of one-year-old male calves obtained from a slaughterhouse were exposed to microwave radiation. One eye from each pair used for control. Each exposure session lasted about 2 weeks. Both control and exposed lenses were kept in an incubator at a constant temperature. During this period, each exposed lens had experienced up to 2 megawatts of 1.1 gigahertz radiation virtually around the clock, and each hour that it was exposed for a 50-minute session followed by a 10-minute break. During one of these breaks, every 24 hours, it was tested optically and compared to the control lens. During the short 5-minute optical test, the lens was not exposed to radiation, but when exposed, its average temperature was maintained constant in an incubator. The experiment yielded a number of interesting results. Exposing the lens for a prolonged time to microwave radiation in the frequency and intensity described above caused macroscopic damage affecting the optical quality of the lens. This damage increased as the experiment and radiation continued, and it reached a maximum level after a number of days. When the exposure stopped, the optical damage began to heal gradually. Interestingly enough, a similar maximum level was observed when the irradiation intensity was reduced to one-half the original, except that it took twice the length of time. On the microscopic level, a different kind of damage occurred. Tiny bubbles were created on the surface of the lens. The bubbles were formed by irradiation with microwave and were not the result of a heat created through the lens. The researchers have speculated that the mechanism responsible for the creation of the bubbles is microscopic friction between particular cells exposed to electromagnetic radiation. Contrary to the macroscopic damage, the microscopic damage did not show any signs of healing and continued to accumulate during the course of the experiment. And although the researchers are cautious about interpreting the results of the experiment and its possible implications to public health, it seems that prolonged exposure to microwave radiation, similar to that used by cellular telephones, can lead to both macroscopic and microscopic damage to the lens of your eyes, and that at least part of this damage seems to accumulate over time, and it does not heal. Professor Levi Schuchner, who worked on the research, told ISRACAST that attention should be paid not only to specific absorption rate, that's the SAR, but also to the total energy absorbed by the tissue, that's the SA test, which is not currently under supervision by the appropriate regulative authorities, implying that the duration of exposure is not less important than the intensity of the irradiation. I want to point out that in Russia, they do not use these cell phones, at least not on the level that we're using them here. They know about the problems that were associated with these microwave towers. And they actually used those in Cold War experiments on the American embassy in Moscow. The Russians were far advanced in this technology during the Cold War. And in fact, they actually used it against us. All right. I'm about out of time, so let me give you a final reminder. And we'll be back and take this up again tomorrow on microwave poisoning, the radiation poisoning of America. Now, you've been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard worldwide over the Internet daily. For more information about the law school and The Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. The law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the law school at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Time's up. We got to leave it right there, so we'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.